Hello and welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm your host, librarian Laura Zaro Kopinski, and today I'm very excited to welcome Zibby Owens to the podcast. Zibby is the CEO of Moms Don't Have Time To, a media company she founded featuring podcasts, publications, and communities. She hosts the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time To Read Books and Moms Don't Have Time To Lose Weight. She's the author-editor of the anthology Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology, all proceeds of which go to COVID-19 vaccine research. She's also the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time To Write and founder of the Zibby Awards. Named New York City's top bookfluencer by Vulture and on Oprah's list of top podcasts 2 years in a row, Zibby's a frequent contributor to Good Morning America, The Washington Post, Good Day LA, and other media outlets. She has 2 children's books forthcoming and another anthology, Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids, debuting in November. She currently lives in New York with her husband and 4 children, and she always has a book nearby. Zibby, welcome to A Bookish Home. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I'm really excited to talk about the anthology, which I enjoyed so much. I think listeners will too. It was very comforting and funny, and I feel like has all these little nuggets that you sort of want to underline and savor. So I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, just from even reading your bio, I'm just, you know, amazed at all that is happening. You seem very busy. And I would just sort of love to hear, this is such a huge enterprise now, and you're doing all of this work promoting authors and books. I would love for you to kind of take us back to the beginning. And how did this all get started? Did you have hopes that this is where it was all sort of going to head, or did it evolve a lot over time?
It evolved a lot over time. I never could have tried and then succeeded to do this, I think. No, I mean, my goal was always, like, I've always loved to write and I've always loved to read. And I had been doing a lot of parenting essay writing. After my divorce, I had all this extra time every other weekend, which was like a novelty for me with as a mother of 4. So I could finally get back into my passion for writing and for reading and all of that. And one night my husband said to me, and I got remarried, and then my husband said to me, you know, why don't you take all these essays you've been writing and turn them into a book? And I said, ugh, moms don't have time to read books. And then I was like, oh, haha, that's so funny. I'll just make that the title of my book. Long story short, it ended up not being a book. But a friend at the time said, well, why don't you try starting a podcast? And I thought, well, I have the perfect title for a podcast. What should I have it be about? And I thought, well, I'm always recommending books. I'm always ripping out magazine articles or forwarding things. And maybe I could just read those to help people. To help save people time, moms like me who were super stressed and busy. And then I found out that was illegal. So I said, okay, well, I'm not going to do that. But I guess I could try interviewing authors. And I didn't know very many, but I thought, well, I don't know. I could just give it a shot and see how it is. So I tried it and I loved it. I loved sitting there interviewing an author and like finding out more about the backstory behind the book and all of that. And I found authors were so willing to talk, as you're probably finding yourself.
Yes.
And then people are always looking for a way to get the word out about their books. And so in addition to sort of, you know, filling my own bucket, if you will, of, you know, a dream job hearing from all these authors, I was also helping authors, which was amazing. And then, of course, I started thinking of all these new ways that I could help authors and help moms and help just busy listeners or people who missed being intellectually stimulated in some way or were too busy. And so things have really grown out of there. But no, this was not the plan.
Well, it's amazing how it's all sort of taken shape. And I would agree with you. I have been very surprised and pleased. I sort of remember saying to some friends when A Bookish Home got started, like, you mean I can read a book and love it and reach out to an author? And a lot of times they say yes to coming on. Like, this is just too much fun.
And you've had like amazing, you've had amazing authors on your show. Like,
It's been so much fun. Yeah, it's sort of a book nerd dream. And I've been loving, I was listening actually just this morning to your Paula McLean episode, who I love. And I just think it's so fascinating to get to hear deeper dive with authors and just the story behind the book, the story more behind their reading and writing lives. So I love that. So it's fun to get to listen to yours. And In the anthology, it's fun too, because I feel like we get to see a side of some authors that, how did that come to be as you were maybe thinking about putting this all together?
So that was a direct outgrowth from the podcast, because so often I would do an interview and then think, well, I wish that I could hear more about, so-and-so's marathon running experiences, or I wish I could hear more about that loss that she just basically just touched on a little bit. And I was always saying like, oh, you should write an essay on that. You should write an essay on that. And then I was like, well, maybe I could just get authors to write essays on these things. Which, looking back, was sort of a bold, I guess. But I don't know. At the time, I was like, why not? It's another way for them to contribute. And I honestly thought they're writers. Of course, they're all going to want to write essays, because I love writing essays. But essay writing in itself is not necessarily a beloved form. Like some authors who I would have thought would say yes in a heartbeat were like, oh, I don't really like writing essays. And I was like, what? But then again, like, it's not like I'm a novel writer, so
right,
everyone
right.
has their form. But I started by making this big spreadsheet of all the authors who had been on the podcast and what potential essays they could write about. And I put it, or that I'd want to hear more about in particular, and I put it into different buckets. And I worked at the time with an author who had been on my podcast named Claire Gibson. And we had conceived of these different categories to put the essays into based on the things moms didn't have time to do the most, like eat, work out, read, breathe, and have sex. So I thought if I just had authors write essays inspired by those topics, I would get a really interesting cross-section of themes and topics and voices. So that's really how that started. And I was going to have it be a big splashy website, all designed and amazing. And then I let go of all those plans when the pandemic hit and just literally like put them on my own website, like just like slapped them up in Squarespace and tweeted them out. And I did that for about 9 weeks with 5 essays a week. And of course, I had a lot of help with different editors and designers and stuff doing that. And then I stopped it in the middle of the summer. And then come September, I realized, oh my gosh, I have so many of these essays. This is like a book. So then I decided I should sell it as a book.
I love that. And it kind of is perfect too for moms to be reading before bed. I know for me, like, it's like sometimes you're so tired at the end of the day, like, but it's so nice to have like read an essay or two. And so many of them have these, just such relatable takeaways and things I was writing down earlier. I love the essay about crying, and where she's, I forget the author's name now, who said, "Before kids, the world was my crying oyster." Oh, Liz Astroff.
Yes, Liz Astroff.
I was like, oh, yes, it's yes. So true. And then Markdown, Ashley Prentice Norton, her starts yep. saying, "It's common knowledge among women that a book club only comes into its own after everyone stops reading the book," which is so relatable. But just so many different nuggets that it's just so nice to just read a little bit at a time and get all these different perspectives. And was it, in terms of like your timeline, was it managing getting all of the essays, editing all the essays, trying to get it out in a timely manner since you are trying to support vaccine research and all of that? Did that just become crazy to manage?
Oh, so I had started this whole project in January, and the deadlines, I had given authors a long lead time to get their essays in. So it's not like everybody was scrambling all at the same time. And we did have sort of staggered deadlines. That said, a lot of the editing did happen during the beginning stages of the pandemic. But once they were done, there they were. So, I really am indebted to Claire Gibson and Alyssa Altman and Carolyn Murnick, and even my babysitter, Jamie, who's an English major. Like, we all were just like, copy editing and all of that. And then in terms of donating the proceeds, so I basically had all the essays were in final form when I submitted it as a book. And it's sort of tragically in between the time that I stopped the essays and before I submitted them as a book, my husband's grandmother and mother passed away from COVID, and his mother was like completely healthy at the before she got it and vibrant, young, full of life. And we had to go through this horrific sort of 6-week hospital journey of just the most awful stuff imaginable. And we decided that we had to give back in some way. And how could we spare other families from seeing some of the stuff that we had seen and heard and gone through? So I'm on the board of Mount Sinai Hospital. Mount Sinai Health System now, which I've been involved in since I was like born, basically. And we thought it would be good to try to help develop a vaccine, which at the time there was, you know, at the time there was no vaccine yet, and everybody was trying to do to launch one as soon as possible. So we partnered up with them, and they're still doing a great job. They're developing a low-cost vaccine that will be administered through the nose to developing nations and doesn't have to be stored at a very low temperature, so it's easier to ship and all this great stuff. And they've finished all the animal trials and are in human trials right now, and been written up in a bunch of articles and things like that. So I'm really, you know, keeping my fingers crossed that this vaccine finds its way out into the world and helps save lives. And if the proceeds from my book, not that they're so staggeringly high, but you know, every bit counts. So
definitely.
So that's why, you know, we donate the proceeds there.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry for your losses. I read about that in the book, and that just heartbreaking. So I'm sure it's yeah, it's nice to be able to sort of honor her legacy in that way. And, you know, even in terms of the vaccine research, you know, I would imagine just having young kids too, I'm hoping, I mean, I don't know, we don't know what will end up happening if they're going to keep working on vaccines for the little ones. But I mean, even that research, like there's still so much to do. So it's great that you're able to be supporting it in that way. Well, you know, one of the things...
Can I ask, how old are
you? Oh, sure. They are 1 and 4. So they're little guys, but well, almost 2 and 4. Wow. Yeah, so I definitely could relate to lots of these days and just craziness of quarantine life. Are there any in particular that really... I'm sure so many of them spoke to you or, you know, were special to you as you were kind of compiling this, but did any in particular stand out?
You know, it's funny. I just finished today recording the audiobook for this book. So I've had a chance to reread all the essays out loud. And I just this morning finished reading Julie Satow's essay, which was so poignant about how much her daughter had missed her babysitter during the pandemic and what the
yes.
definition of family really was, and mm-hmm. how she started by having her daughter, she found a love poem essentially that her daughter had written to Penny, their babysitter. And after Julie writes this essay, she says at the end, you know, I realize I've just done the same thing. And it just made me like start crying. And even talking about it, I get the chills again. It was just like, oh, just it, the ways in which people, we love so many different people and the gratitude we have for so many people in our lives and this whole like it takes a village mentality of raising kids and just how isolating it was for so long during the pandemic with nobody around, not even family. So
yep.
I don't know. I was having like a PTSD moment, I think, rereading that essay.
Well, you know, I was just going to say, in a way, it's sort of like an essay like that in particular, I think is really going to wind up feeling like a little bit of a time capsule for us, because it's, you know, reminding me of my daughter, like really missing her daycare teachers at the start of the pandemic. And, you know, I think I would imagine we're going to start to forget some of those small mm-hmm. experiences. And so, yeah, this it does sort of like jolt those memories as you're reading some of the essays in an interesting way.
And they're not all there. And, you know, as I was rereading them, I'm like, these are not all about the pandemic. I mean, some of them are not at all related to it, but they all are just like Wendy Walker's essay was great too. And it was about how she decided that even though she had sort of meeting a new man on her list as a divorced mom, that she kind of decided, you know what, this is the time to spend with my teen son. And even though he ignores me, like, I want to be home and I don't want to be out dating. And like, you know what, that's okay. I'm going to take it off my to-do list for the time being. I don't know. It, like so many of these will extend. I hope people read them. I feel like if I don't market it enough, I'm like doing all these authors a disservice. So I feel like I have like, you know, a backpack stuffed with 50 people or 60 people I'm like carrying around. And there's a lot of pressure to like get their essays out there. So
I hope
people know that they're really good. And it's not only about, you know, moms even.
They really are. And, you know, it does feel like, I don't know, just getting to hear from so many different perspectives and like the walls are really pulled down mm-hmm. and you're just getting to hear, you know, something a friend would share with you. Just, I really enjoyed them a lot. I think listeners should go pick it up or head to their local library and get reading. you know, it was making me wonder too, because some, you know, the authors involved have been on your podcast. Are there, you know, particular interviews that have really stuck with you or inspired you, or sort of words of wisdom that you come back to a lot from any of the authors that you've interviewed?
Yes, and in different ways. I am trying to write a memoir now myself. And the writing advice, I write essays all the time. So that's like second nature to me. I love doing it and it's very easy. And that's just sort of how my mind like processes things. So I can sit down and whip out an essay, no problem. But I've tried writing several memoirs before, and now this one I'm going into with like, you know, an auditorium of people with like little bubbles over their heads with different advice from me. I mean, from like every podcast interview. So, you know, one author said just open the document every day because as soon as you have it open, you'll start tinkering with it a little bit more. And that's an interesting comment to me. And there's just been like all these reflections on how, you know, getting it down and working on it later, and you can't edit what you don't have. And I don't know. Of course, now I can't think of like a lot of the advice, but there's been a
Well,
lot
it
of
all
great
sort of
writing
seeps
advice.
in, I think. You know, it just becomes part of probably part of the way you think about writing. And I know I think about that a lot. Just it even demystifies it a little bit, like, because I think so many I mean, and it's inspiring every time, but I think so many people talk about like you just have to get that, you know, crappy first draft written, or you know, button chair. And I don't know, I think it does demystify some of it. I think for a while I had this image, especially growing up, of just the book just pours out of someone and as a whole perfect thing, and it's definitely not the way it is. So I think it is helpful to hear.
Tell me about the writing you do.
Well, I've tried a few different projects. I was trying to write a nonfiction book for a while, and I actually have recently switched to trying to write a novel, which is, I think, partly because of the podcast, because I think for so long I felt like I couldn't possibly do that, even though I've always wanted to. Just started thinking, well, you know, if I think there's so many inspirational stories I've heard from authors who just had this story they wanted to tell, or, you know, had always wanted to do it and just bit by bit got it done. So that's sort of where I'm at now, just trying to. I was listening to an interview with Lily King recently, who talked about in that Writers and Lovers book how you like a painter just sort of gets the whole that first layer down first. I'm like, I just need to think of it as a first layer and see where it goes. And yeah, that you can't edit a blank page. So that's what I'm working on now. But
That's a good reminder. Yes, I loved that quote. That was great. And actually, Lily King has an essay in my second anthology, which comes out in November. And it was so beautiful. It was like about her daughter being sick and how she has to deal with it as a mom. And oh my gosh, I read her essay like on my computer. And in the document, it was like for Zibby, and I was like, "This is so cool!"
I love
And
her.
it's such a beautiful essay. And I was just like, "This is why I do all of this, right?" Like this beautiful essay is now like a part of, you know, a book. And I don't know. It just made me feel so good. And she's so awesome. So
And now
anyway.
it's out in the world. I've been listening to Writers and Lovers the audiobook in the car on my commute lately, and it's been like just so lovely. And yeah, just I really do. Well, and this is a question I'll ask you too. I feel like everything is better when I have a good book going, and multiple, like a good book for bedtime, a good book for the car, like a good book for just kind of like sitting in the living room while the kids are playing or whatever it is. And I just feel like it just makes everything better. I know I am happier when that is the case.
I am right there with you. That is exactly how I feel. And yes, we are like living parallel existences in the book, in the book
Yes.
sphere.
And has that always been the case for you? Like, what role did books have for you growing up? Were you always sort of a big bookworm, or did that change as you got older?
Yes, I've always been a huge bookworm. I always had a book in my hand. I would read everything. We would go to the library and bring this whole tote bag home, and then I would plow through it, and we'd just like get back in the car and drive right back to the library. This is more in the summer when I didn't have so much schoolwork or whatever. But Yeah, I would read all the books that I had, and then I would like go into my mom's room and read all of her books, and so I ended up reading like Judith Krantz, romance when I was like, I don't know, 10 or something crazy. But yes, books for me have always been the way I've made sense of the world and have been guideposts for me emotionally. I've
Yes.
always loved to read memoir, and I've loved in particular reading about getting through tough things, not necessarily things I've been through, but just that resilience that people show and like how they get through it and different relationships. I don't know. I just, yeah, they're just like the guiding light as I go through life and also the escape, especially as a parent. So, the days can be long when you're with the kids. And I was a stay-at-home mom for many years. And reading, I remember propping up Z by, Treece Ann Fowler on my breast bump when I was like pumping for my third kid, and just like without that, like what, I don't know, I just needed it. I need it and I love it, and
Oh
I've
my
o it's
God,
just always been,
completely.
yeah.
If I hadn't had my Kindle, like while nursing and everything, I don't know what I would have done. I feel like it's like how I stayed sane in the middle of the night. But yeah, were there any particular books that stand out for you from when you were a kid doing all that reading?
I remember reading Marjorie Morningstar, Up the Down Staircase. I read all the, typical kid books like Beverly Cleary and Judy Blume and all those, Sweet Valley High. And what else? I had a copy of Gone with the Wind that I used to like work my way through. I read Jane Eyre
Oh,
at summer
yep.
camp, and I have to like go back. And then all these like random books like Baby Sister about the girl who's like Norma Klein. I feel like there were like all these books and like something called like Goodnight Phoebe. And like, I don't know. I just like, I read like everything. And then there was this one book I saw in the bookstore called The Language of Goldfish, written by Zibby O'Neill. And of course, I like was, didn't know anybody with the name Zibby aside from me. And I actually got in touch with her and we became pen pals. And then a couple years later, and this is when I was 9 and 10, by the time I was 12, she came to my house in New York when she came to town from Michigan and took me to tea at the Plaza. And it was like the coolest
Oh
thing ever. Yeah,
my
I
God. So
know.
funny.
It was so great. So.
Oh, well, as somebody who is such a big reader but also a writer, how do you sort of navigate the push pull of that? Is there one that pulls you more than the other? Like, do you, or what are your sort of routines like for reading and writing?
That's a really good question. I don't have a routine. I just try to like feel what I want to do most, I guess. I mean, for me, writing, especially the essays, which I still do like every week or every other week, I usually write them because I feel like I have to write them. Right, like, oh my gosh, I have to write about this. So I wait for that to happen, or like a topic just is bubbling up in my mind, or I'm like thinking about it for a little bit, and then I'm like, no, now I have to write this. So I kind of stop everything and do it. Whereas writing for reading for me rather is like the through line. It's like the meals every day, right? It's just part of how I get through the day. And I guess writing is more like, I don't know, going out for ice cream or something.
Well, and they feed into each other very well, I think so, which is fun too. Well, I do always love to hear what guests have been reading lately. Is there are there some books that you'd want to recommend to listeners?
Yes, there are always books I want to recommend. But yes, I just finished this amazing book called The Lost Boys of Montauk by Amanda Fairbanks. And I literally read it like I went to bed in between, but I read it late into the night and then woke up and like read straight until I finished it. Like ignoring, the kids, I was like holding it as I was making breakfast kind of book. It was about this shipwreck off the coast of Montauk with four young men, and but it was really about the loss and the grief and what happened to the people who were left and processing all of that, and then what they were even doing on the boat to begin with. And there was a lot of information, so you couldn't like skim it. You had to be in it and like focused. It was so good. Anyway, that was
Yeah,
my
check that
recent,
out.
yeah, it's my recent recent favorite. I also just finished reading Let's Talk About Hard Things by Anna Sale, and I really enjoyed that. She is the host of Death, Sex, and Money, the podcast, and it was so good. She divided it into those categories plus family and tradition, I think, family and identity. and also her own life story, and that was really delightful to read.
Oh, I didn't know she had a book coming out. I really like that podcast. So that'll be nice to listen, to read. Though I'm like, oh, if she reads the audiobook, that would be nice too. I feel like that would be a good one to listen to. Well, I have a few just like rapid fire favorite sort of questions if you want to share. Do you have a favorite, well, it's probably hard for you to choose, but a favorite bookstore that you'd want to recommend?
One of my favorites is Bookhampton. It's in East Hampton on Long Island. And I've been going since I was a kid and I've watched it change over time. And I don't know, I just love it. I love the manager and the owner. And anyway, I would recommend that.
Awesome. How about a favorite library?
The New York Public Library.
Say you can't really compete with that. So where do you most like to read? Do you have a favorite reading spot?
In bed.
How about a like literary destination, like an author's house or a museum or anything like that?
I really want to go to this writer's museum that I've recently heard about, but I haven't gone yet. I think it's somewhere in the Midwest. So I'd really like to go to that. I'd also love to like get a tour of Yaddo at some point. These are like wish list items.
Yes. You've got to have a long literary destination wish list.
Right?
yeah. One of mine is I would really like to go see all the different like Laura Ingalls Wilder, like homesteads.
Oh, I should have said I loved reading those as a kid. I should have said that. My mom would like kill me for not mentioning. Yes. I was reading those all the time. Yes.
Oh, yes. Same. Is there a book that you like a favorite book to kind of read and reread? For comfort?
I really like a book by Dani Shapiro called Slow Motion. It's a memoir she wrote early in her career. And I find that every 10 years or so I read it and I have a totally different perspective on it. So I like coming back to that.
I love that. Well, I have so enjoyed talking with you. And I know that there are going to be a lot of listeners who want to follow along with everything you're doing. So can you tell us just sort of where they should go? And I know you have a lot of different events and things going on. So if there's anything you want to tell us about.
Yes, they should listen to my podcasts. I have a bunch of different podcasts right now. Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books, which is every day, 7 days a week. And then I started recently Moms Don't Have Time to Have Sex, which is really funny. And it's three Q&A questions with this international sex expert. And that's once a week, kind of like a women's magazine column. I have a podcast called Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, which is also once a week, interviewing experts in the health and wellness arena and people who have just struggled or have successful tips with their weight. I have Zibby's virtual book club and we meet every other Tuesday. And for half an hour, we talk about the book. And then the next half an hour, the author comes and joins us for Q&A. It's on Zoom.
That's so called, much fun.
Zibby, you should come.
I want to. That sounds so much fun. I was poking around last night on the website like, oh, I have to check out the book club. So.
Yeah, check it out. It's nice. There's like a core group that comes every week, but we have so many different people coming all the time and I really enjoy it. And then I have a retreat coming up, although it's already sold out. It's the first Moms Don't Have Time to Travel retreat, which is a writing / authors / reading retreat, I guess. There are 40 panelists, all of whom are most of whom are contributors to my second anthology, and they'll be coming doing lots of great panels. There'll be a writing workshop and all of that. That's in November. I have a communities on a mighty network called Moms No Time to Travel, Moms No Time to Grieve for people who need support in those areas or recommendations. I started the Zibby Awards. So if there are parts of a book that you think are great, like the best plot twist or the best end papers or the best editor or something, I thought that we deserved an Oscars for this industry that was a little more accessible.
Yes, I thought that sounded like so much fun. Like I was looking at best cover and that sounded great. And when are those gonna actually get announced?
The nominations are due, like the submissions are due by the end of August. By August, I can't remember if we said August 1st or August. I think August 1st, and then there'll be a award ceremony that I'm thinking is going to be October 4th in New York City.
Oh, so fun.
Hopefully live streamed or something. And then follow me on Instagram @ Zibby Owens, and I have like a zillion other Instagram accounts, but you can start there. and my website is zibbyowens.com, and everything is on the website, which you obviously were on, and thank you so much for researching me and doing your homework and all of that.
So. Well, there's so much for Bookworms in the Zibby universe. So that is a lot of fun for all of us. And I hope listeners go check it all out. And I hope they go pick up the Moms Don't Have Time to Quarantine anthology. It is such a treat to read. So people should really go pick that up. And just thank you again for taking the time to come on the podcast and for all you're doing to support books and authors.
Laura, thank you. This was so fun, and I can't wait to read what you have to write. Oh, I should also say one more thing. Moms Don't Have Time to Write is our publication on Medium, and you should write for us. You should send
in an
essay.
I want to. I saw that. It's going to that put a little fire under me. I'm like, oh, I've got to work on that. So
yes. That's
great.
That's your assignment today.
That's my assignment. Well, thank you, Zibby.
Thank you.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com. And there you'll also find a link to our new online bookshop. A Bookish Home has teamed up with the new organization bookshop.org, which supports independent bookstores. And if you'd like, you can browse books by authors who have been guests on A Bookish Home. I'm also sharing there all of the books mentioned on the podcast, books I've been reading lately, and other recommendations. It's a really wonderful site to browse and look through books. And if you make a purchase, it supports A Bookish Home and independent bookstores. So it's a win-win. So if you want to check that out directly, it's bookshop.org/shop/abookishhome. And you'll also find that at abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy reading.